we have made strides in addressing disparities, but clearly there's just so much more to do.
Hi, and welcome to GEO's Watchdog Report, your source for news and information from the U.S. Government Accountability Office. I'm Holly Hobbs. This year, GAO celebrates its 100th anniversary. To commemorate our centennial, we are recording a series of podcasts about our history as an agency and our contributions to public policy and program oversight. Today, we'll tackle a tough topic in GAO's work and an issue that has once again been raised in the public consciousness as a challenge needing immediate attention. Today, we'll talk about racial disparities and diversity. Joining us are three GAO experts with portfolios of work on racial disparities and diversity issues in healthcare, the economy, and education. Here to discuss are Nikki Clowers, the managing director in our healthcare team, Dan Garcia-Diaz, the managing director in our financial markets and community investment team, and Jackie Nowicki, a director in our education, workforce, and income security team. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Holly.
Thank you for having me.
Happy to be here, Holly.
So, Nikki, let's start with healthcare. Since the pandemic is on everyone's mind, we've done work and are continuing to monitor COVID-19's effects on different communities, including reports that minority communities are being hit harder by the pandemic. Can you tell us what we found so far?
In our November CARES Act report, we examined the issues of health outcome disparities. And in particular, we found that racial and minority groups have higher case counts of COVID. There's higher hospitalization rates among minorities, and there's also higher death numbers for those minority populations compared to the white populations.
Do we know why minority communities have been hit so hard by the pandemic?
There could be access issues in terms of, for example, to providers or to testing sites. These sites might not be evenly distributed across all segments of society or in all locations. There could be higher rates of pre-existing conditions. There's also other patient factors and family history. But importantly, the research also points to institutional racism and the role that may play in different outcomes. We believe additional work is needed, and we'll continue to study these issues in future reports.
And while we're reporting on the disparities that have been highlighted by the pandemic, we've long reported on disparities in healthcare access and outcomes. Can you tell us a little bit about that work?
One of the areas that we have examined is in the area of maternal mortality. And what we found there is between 2007 and 2016, over 6,700 women died of causes related to or aggravated by pregnancy. That's roughly about 700 women each year. The number of deaths are not equally distributed across different racial and ethnic groups. In particular, Black women were three times more likely to die, and Native American women were two times more likely to die compared to white women.
And do we know why Black and Native American women are dying at such a high rate?
The research suggests that there is a combination of factors that could be driving this disparity, including issues of access to care, patient history, family history, the provider experience in the community. And there's also research that suggests that there are systemic issues within the healthcare system of institutional racism that needs to be further examined.
And we've also found disparities in healthcare outcomes among our nation's Black veterans. Can you talk about our work in those areas and what we found?
As the veteran population has grown more diverse over the years, VA has established goals for health equity, that everyone should have equitable health outcome results regardless of racial or ethnicity group. But what we see, and VA sees this as well, there are disparities in health outcomes. For example, outcomes for controlling blood pressure or blood glucose is worse for Black veterans compared to white veterans. We have also seen that the research shows that there's lower survival rate for Black veterans with cancer compared to their white counterparts.
Do we know why?
One of the limitations in our ability to understand what's behind those statistics is the need for better data. We need more comprehensive, complete data so we can better understand trends that we're seeing. And we've made recommendations to VA to address this data limitation, and they agreed to implement them.
So it sounds like the coronavirus pandemic has highlighted disparities in healthcare access and outcomes, which is an issue we at GAO will continue to monitor, but that disparities in access and outcome are longstanding concerns that will require attention even after COVID-19. Now let's turn to some of our work on disparities seen in our economy. Dan, minority communities also face an equal treatment when it comes to achieving things that we view as part of the American dream, such as buying a home. What can you tell us about the differences in homeownership rates when it comes to race?
So we see differences. So in recent year, the homeownership for, say, white households has been around 72%. But we see markedly lower rates of homeownership for Blacks, which is around 42%, and Hispanics a little bit higher at around 47%.
Why are homeownership rates lower for Black and Hispanic families?
Well, no two populations are ever going to be exactly the same. Different populations have differences in income, credit history, age, household formation, education, and so on, all factors that can contribute to homeownership. But even after you control all those factors, there's probably some differences that are due to discrimination in the market. So discrimination can occur when minority borrowers are denied credit or perhaps receive less favorable or generous terms on mortgage credit. And these can frustrate minorities from becoming homeowners.
So if Black and Hispanic Americans have lower home ownership rates, does that mean they're more likely to rent? And if so, can you tell us something about their affordability problems?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. So generally speaking, if you can't afford to own your home, you will rent. And so generally we see that renters have lower average incomes than homeowners. And as a result, we do see in the data significant portions of renters experiencing an affordability problem across the different races. And so, for instance, about 22% of white renters have a severe affordability problem. And by severe, I mean that the household pays more than 50% of their gross income in rent. And then about 29% of Black renters and 27% of Hispanic renters have a severe affordability problem. And so these are obviously significant challenges because if you have a lower income and you're paying more than half of your income towards rent, that leaves less resources for other necessities such as healthcare expenses, building up the savings, college education, or even building up enough funding to buy a home in the future.
And so there are some concerns about COVID-19's effects on homeownership. During the last economic crisis, the Great Recession, we reported on impacts to homeownership rates. What can you tell us about that?
So right before the financial crisis, most racial and ethnic groups peaked in terms of their homeownership. But after the crisis, a lot of different racial groups, and particularly Blacks and Hispanics, saw significant declines from those highs right before the 2008-09 foreclosure crisis, especially among Black families. They are struggling to see a return to the higher rates right before the financial crisis.
So what do we know about how COVID might impact homeownership rates?
It's still a little too early to tell. There are multiple protections in place to ensure that homeowners who are struggling right now during the pandemic can stay in their homes and not be foreclosed. One of the methods is simply forbearance. So that means you don't have to pay your mortgage for a certain period of time. And that amount that you are not paying is simply added to the end of your mortgage. And that's a clever way of addressing and delaying potential foreclosure crisis among homeowners, and especially those families who are economically distressed. But a lot of this is going to depend on how long the pandemic crisis continues and its impact on employment.
What about lending practices generally outside of mortgages? Have we done any work on that and found disparities in lending?
Yeah, so we've looked across all types of lending, not just mortgage lending. And there's longstanding concerns that certain parts of the markets have access to credit to finance business activity and so on. And a key thing that at least our work has shown over time is that agencies don't always have complete data that allows them to fully understand the extent of the disparity and the reasons for the disparity. And here's the predicament. When you investigate issues like discrimination, it's a fairly intensive process, and good data is a critical part of it.
So we've discussed racial disparities in healthcare access and outcomes, and the challenges that minority families face in our economy, particularly when trying to realize the American dream and purchase a home. Now let's look at our public education system. Jackie, our work has shown that racial disparities and diversity issues impact lives at a very young age. GAO has reported that unequal treatment of children can start as early as preschool. Can you talk about some of our work on this and what we found?
So you're exactly right. In 2018, we found that starting in preschool, children as young as 3 and 4 years old were suspended and expelled from school. And specifically, it's Black students and boys that were disproportionately disciplined. And we found that that pattern continued for older children as well. Probably one of the most telling facts in our report was that although there were about 17.5 million more white public school students than Black public school students, nearly 176,000 more Black students were suspended from school.
What's the long-term impact of these patterns?
So beyond the obvious loss of instructional time, when students are suspended from school, they're less likely to graduate on time, and they're more likely to repeat a grade, drop out of school, or become involved in the juvenile justice system.
I think some people excuse these disparities by saying that issues with discipline or educational outcomes are socioeconomic, and they're not due because of racial disparities, but we have findings on that too, right?
Yeah, so the statistical models we ran showed that disparities were widespread and persisted regardless of the type of school attended and the level of school poverty. Even Black students attending wealthy schools were suspended at disproportionate rates, in fact, by more than 12 percentage points.
What about the quality of education students receive?
So the overwhelming majority of kids in high poverty schools, roughly 80%, are Black or Hispanic. So what exactly does that mean for kids? It means that Black and Brown students typically had less access to the sequences of math and science courses that most public four-year colleges expect students to take in high school. It means access to rigorous high school courses decreased as the level of school poverty increased. So, for example, we found that almost 90% of the wealthiest schools offered physics compared to 62% of the poorest schools.
Jackie, these disparities sound significant. What is the federal government doing to address disparities in schools?
One is to rigorously investigate allegations of discrimination and enforce the nation's civil rights laws. And the Departments of Education and Justice have also issued guidance to help school districts understand their obligations under these laws and develop practices and strategies to address disparities. We spend billions of dollars each year to help address these kinds of disparities and close achievement gaps. For example, about 70% of school districts qualify for Title I funds, which support schools and school districts with low-income students. And there's also a magnet school assistance program, which provides grants to establish and operate magnet schools in districts with federally mandated desegregation plans.
So we've talked about racial disparities in healthcare, the economy, and education, three areas that have major impacts on the quality of life of Americans. What should our listeners take away from our work on racial disparities? Nikki, let's start with you.
Our work has shown that health outcome disparities are real. Racial and ethnic groups generally have worse health outcomes compared to their white friends and families and colleagues. There are many factors that could be contributing to the outcomes that we see. And continued federal attention on this issue is appropriate and warranted.
And Deanne?
Well, the bottom line is that there are significant differences across race. There are a lot of factors that explain that. Homeownership is a complex process, and it's critical that federal policy remain focused on understanding and addressing those differences. But in particular, to the extent that those differences are due to discrimination, it's important that federal regulatory agencies who are responsible for overseeing lenders ensure that lenders are acting in a fair and unbiased manner.
And finally, Jackie?
For K-12 education, I think it's important to remember that K-12 is largely a state and local responsibility, but obviously the federal government does have a role here. We have made strides in addressing disparities, but clearly there's just so much more to do. Disparities are not new. They remain a significant barrier for a lot of kids. So I really think we're talking about a multi-pronged approach here. Clearly not an issue that the federal government can solve on its own.
That was GAO's Nikki Clowers, Dan Garcia-Diaz, and Jackie Nowicki talking about our portfolio of work on racial disparity and diversity issues. Thank you all for sharing this work, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in to the Watchdog Report. To hear more podcasts, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, and make sure you leave a rating and review to let others know about the work we're doing. For more from the Congressional Watchdog, the U.S. Government Accountability Office, visit us at gao.gov.